The reading today is from Luke 15, verses 1 to 7, and in the Church Bibles it's on page 990. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering round to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who do not need to repent. Amen.
There we are. Thank you, Claire. Great. You've also got a news update somewhere on your chair. If we send out stories fairly regularly through email. If you're interested in those, there's an email address at the back. And if you're interested in giving to us, we're completely supported through voluntary donations, and the details of that are on the back. But I wanted to talk this morning about freedom. Often when I'm invited to speak somewhere, and I speak in Romania and further afield, and here sometimes too, I ask students who invite me to tell me, what are you talking about with your friends? What's coming up in conversation at the moment? What are people thinking about? And it's interesting that increasingly the questions of a younger generation in Europe are questions like, is there hope in life? What does it mean to have freedom? What is my purpose here? These are the kinds of questions that people are asking. Probably the most common question that I'm asked to speak on at the moment is freedom. And I wanted to share some thoughts with you this morning about freedom. I don't know when you think of freedom and what it means for a person to be free, what comes to your mind when you think of freedom? What images come to your mind if you had to define freedom? I think that in our culture, freedom is often viewed as the same thing as independence or escape. So this would be, for many people, a picture of freedom. You've got away from it all. You're far away. You're in this beautiful place. You've escaped from your everyday, and that's freedom, really, is to escape everything that seems to be limiting you. It might be to escape from a relationship, whether that's a romantic or marital relationship, or whether that's a work relationship or a family relationship, or just a friendship that you feel like is dragging you down. It's to escape that. If you escape that, then you have freedom. And I was in Amsterdam a couple of months ago, and I asked students, I said, "Well, how would you define freedom?" And one person put his hand up. I said, "I would define freedom as life without obligation." And lots of other people nodded in agreement. Yes, that's freedom. Freedom is to escape obligation to anyone or anything else. Perhaps if you've ever seen the Pixar movie Up, that might be a kind of graphic image of how we view freedom. There's an old man in the movie who ties lots of balloons to his house, and his house floats off away from everything. Actually, if you've seen the whole movie, you'll know it's a really interesting idea of freedom, actually, which is much more nuanced and complicated if you've seen the whole of Up. But we're used to these images in media. If I had time, I'd show you an interesting advert from the Levi Jeans company, where there's two, it's called Freedom, and there's two people, and they start running, and they run through walls, and nothing can get in their way, and then they run up tree. In the end, they run up these two trees, and they jump off the top of the trees up into the sky, because nothing can hold me back. That's freedom. If there's nothing holding me back, nothing restraining me, I'm just free. I'm just independent. There is the advert, but we won't watch it now. So I would say that independence and escape are not adequate ways to to understand freedom. I don't think that the way our culture views freedom, and perhaps for those of us who view freedom as independence or escape, I don't think that's a good way to view freedom. And when I was researching this book last year, I traveled to lots of different countries, and one of the countries I went to was Guatemala. And I was writing a section on social justice, and I asked lots of Guatemalan students, what first got you interested in social justice? Why did you, what awakened you to this? And every one of them told me a story involving a gun. It was a story like, I was on a bus, and someone came on the bus and shot the bus driver dead in front of me. Or I was driving along, and somebody pulled a gun on me, and I drove off, and they were shooting at me. Or somebody robbed me at gunpoint. There's all gun-filled stories. And so I said to the students, well, what's the best place for me to visit in Guatemala to find out more about the problems in your city? And they said, go to the graveyard. All the poorest people are there, because there's a section of the graveyard where the children of the poorest are buried. And I said, well, how do I get there? And they said, take an Uber, just get over there, and we'll send someone to meet you. So I got this Uber out to this really desperate, dangerous place. And when I pulled up, I got out the Uber, and I walked slowly into the graveyard. And I saw this man there who fitted the description I was given. And I said, are you Teddy? And he said, yes, I am. And I said, whew, thank goodness. And so we walked around the graveyard, and he was showing me different things, explaining different things to me. The whole time I was walking around the graveyard, I didn't lose sight of two things. Okay, number one, I did not lose sight of my phone. Number two, I did not lose sight of Teddy. Okay, why was that? Because for me, to be free wasn't to be independent. For me, to be free, actually, it was to... Actually, I needed things. I needed my phone. I needed this guy, Teddy. Otherwise, I would be far less than free. And I think that's what it is. To be human is to be dependent on other things, not just phones and friendships. We do need other people, don't we? We also need oxygen. You can live without oxygen, by the way, and it's an interesting 2 minutes, but that's it. Like, try living without oxygen. Try living without gravity. Sometimes when I'm speaking on the second or third floor of a building on campus, I say to students, listen, let's try to live without the limits of gravity, and you take the window and I'll take the stairs, and we'll see who comes out better out of that one. Actually, we are people. We're dependent, and we're limited beings. And actually, I would say that right relationship is a better way of understanding freedom than independence or than escape. It's actually when we have a good relationship with other people, when we have a good relationship with ourselves, with our environment, with food, with our bodies, with our workplace. It's liberating, isn't it? When things are ordered well. And I don't know if you can think of relationships in your life that are helping you flourish right now, or have in the past helped you flourish. The best times in your life, I am guessing that the best times in your life haven't been times when you have just escaped or been independent. The times in your life that have been best are actually when the connections and the relationships in your life are good. Or can you think of a time when a suboptimal, a less than perfect relationship with someone or something else negatively impacted your life? Because those are the worst times, aren't they, actually? So when we talk about freedom as right relationship, we're kind of inevitably going to start talking about God, aren't we? Because if there's a God, then and freedom is right relationship, then the most important relationship, if there's a God, is going to be the relationship with Him, the relationship with the reason there is something rather than nothing, with the source of all reality. And C.S. Lewis, who's one of my favorite writers, has this great phrase, the sweet poison of the false infinite. What Lewis means by that is, there are things which are good in our world, and we take them and we make them of ultimate value, and then they poison our whole existence. So is independence good? Yes, a certain degree of independence is good. I'm hoping that my children will not have the same degree of dependence on me when they're 18 that they have now when they're 9, 6, and 4. There is a sense in which aspects of independence are really good. Is escape good? Yeah, it certainly is. If you're being abused by your spouse, you need to get out of there. Like, there is a sense in which escape also has a place in this world. But when we define our lives, when we say, okay, for me to be a free, satisfied, fulfilled person, it means for me to escape. It means for me to be independent. Lewis says, actually, we're taking something that's good sometimes, and we're making it of infinite value. Now, if there is a God, our relationship with him will be the most important one. And I just want to explore that idea for a very few minutes with you by reading you this story from Jesus that was read a few moments ago. Jesus has very interesting ideas about freedom. And I don't know all of you, I don't know where you're at in your thoughts on God and Jesus and Christianity. Some of you will view Jesus very authoritatively. Some of you will say, I'm not sure what I think about him. If that's you, that's fine. Take this as the words of a very influential teacher giving you his thoughts on freedom. Jesus said this, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Won't he leave the 99 in the open country? Won't he go and look for the one lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he will joyfully put it on his shoulders and go home. Then he will call his friends and neighbors together and he will say, be joyful with me, I found my lost sheep. This is a very simple story, isn't it? A farmer has 100 sheep, he loses one of them, he leaves the 99 to get the one, brings it home, and everybody's happy. Or in the children's Bible that my kids have, it says, let's all have a party. So that's the story. And let me show you three ideas that Jesus puts in here. The first idea is very simple. Jesus says that we're estranged, actually. If I talked about relationship with God and you thought, I'm not really sure, I hear people say that phrase and I'm not sure what that means. Or, yeah, I feel like that was part of my life, but that's not part of my life now. If that's a confusing idea for you, relationship with God, Jesus says, yeah, that's normal, actually. Actually, humanity as a whole is estranged from God. We are like sheep that have wandered off far away. This is one of my favorite writers. There's a Czech writer called Thomas Halleck. And in his latest book, I Want You to Be, he's a philosopher who teaches at university in Prague. And he says, he's a major intellectual, and he says, there's a lot of discussion of does God exist at the moment? This is a big question, does God exist? And I get asked to speak a lot on this question, does God exist? And he says, well, that's a really interesting question, does God exist? And that's a really important question, does God exist? But he says, it's not the most interesting question we can ask, does God exist? He says, a much more interesting question to ask is, do I want God to exist? He says, that's the most profound question we can ask is, do I want God to exist? Because he says, when we think about God, many of us want to think of ourselves as neutral players in the conversation. That actually, somehow, I can just make a detached, objective judgment about God. And he says, no, actually, whether God is real, whether God wants involvement in your life or not, isn't a thing we can be neutral on. Because if there is a God, that has implications for all of us. And he says our starting point should be to ask, do I want God to be real? I don't know about you, whether you want God to be real. Think about Jesus' story. The sheep got lost, okay? How do you lose a sheep, okay? This is how you don't lose a sheep. You don't lose a sheep like you lose a phone. You walk into Starbucks with your sheep under your arm. You put the sheep down. You make your order. You turn around and somebody stole your sheep, okay? This is how you lose a sheep. It wanders off. And that's what Jesus is saying in the story. There's something in all of us that sort of makes us want to pull away from and wander off from God, whether we're Christian or not Christian or anything else. There is part of us which wants to pull away, which wants to wander away from God. And maybe that's one reason we're so attracted to the idea of religion, of freedom as independence or as escape. St. Augustine, the famous Christian theologian, said, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you." He was saying, we're like these sheep that wandered off and they got lost. And our hunger for freedom is actually a hunger for God. Would you say that you want God to be real? Or would you say you don't want him to be real? How do you feel? Do you feel like you wish God was real? Or do you feel like you wish he wasn't real? This is the second thing Jesus says. Jesus says it's possible to come home. There are 100 sheep. The farmer goes and gets a sheep, and the farmer brings it home, doesn't he? He says you don't actually have to be alienated or distant from God. You don't have to be alienated or distant from God, even though perhaps it's completely your fault or not completely your fault that you wandered off far away. It doesn't matter what the reasons are that you're distant from God. You don't have to be distant from God. I don't know if any of you have heard of G.K. Chesterton. He wrote the Father Brown mysteries that they did on BBC a little while back. Also wrote other books about kind of spirituality and God. And in one of his books, Orthodoxy, he starts with his story. He says there's a British man, and he decides that he's going to go off and discover new lands far away. And so he gets in a yacht, and he sails off. And he says he's away for months. He's away for weeks. He's away for months, for a long time. He's far away from home, and he starts desperately missing home. But also, he desperately wants to discover new lands. He says, eventually, after many months at sea, this man spies land. And so he sails his boat towards land. And he gets out the boat. He goes onto the beach. He drops to his knees. He says, "Yes, I've discovered new lands." And then he looks up. And as he looks up, his eyes see the white cliffs of Dover. And he realizes he hasn't discovered a new land. He's simply come home. And what Chesterton says is that that is what every human being is looking for, actually. At the heart of every human, each of us is looking for the sense of discovering something new and the sense of coming home. And he says that's what we have in God, actually. What could be more delightful, Chesterton says, than to have at the same time, same few minutes, all the fascinating terrors of going abroad combined with all the humane security of coming home again. And that's what it is to come home to God. It's something new because it's a connection that wasn't there or a connection that fell apart. But also, it's coming home because he's the one who made you and the one for whom you are made. I would say there are two types of moment with God that a person can have in their life. The first type is what I would call an enter this moment moment with God. So to give you an illustration, my father some years ago was fishing in the Indian Ocean. This is the 1970s. He's fishing in the Indian Ocean and a storm comes up and his boat got turned upside down and Dad's all cut up and bleeding, and he pulls himself onto the upturned hull of his boat, and around him there are great white sharks swimming in the water. Now my dad's a skeptical guy, an agnostic, not much interest in God, but he thinks, you know what, this could be a moment to pray, why not? I mean, if there is ever a moment, this might be it. So he says, "God, I'm in a bit of a mess here, and I'm here's some things that I'm not doing right in my life, and here are some things I want to fix, but please just help me out of this." Because my mum actually at that point is back home, and she's pregnant with my sister, and I've not even been conceived yet, so you can imagine, desperate situation. And then some fishermen come along and they rescue my dad, and that's great, isn't it? Isn't it good that God hears those prayers, help me out, from anybody, whatever their religion or their viewpoint on God, he'll hear those prayers. And I'm sure you've had moments like that. I find exams, job interviews, driving tests, medical checks. These are moments, aren't they, when we're like, "God, help." OK, Okay, everybody's had those kind of moments. The other sort of moment you could have with God is the moment when you say to God, not help me out with this thing, help me out with this thing, but the moment when you say actually to God, God, actually open my life up to you. I don't just need your help with a few problems here and there in my life. Actually, I open my life up to you. That's what the sheep, then this is a story of the sheep, isn't it? The sheep, it isn't that the sheep says, listen, could you help me awfully out of this this bush that I got myself caught in, or this river that I seem to have stumbled into. Actually, the sheep comes all the way home. And that's what we need, really, to come home to God, not just to help us out with problems, but to reconnect completely with him. I don't know how you would describe your relationship with God. I don't know if you've had moments where you said to God, help me with this, enter this moment, interactions with him. And if you've had a moment where you said to God, please enter my life. The last point, very briefly, is Jesus says that the cost of coming home is not ours. It's not on us to come home to God. It doesn't depend on us. It's not that the sheep phones up the farmer and says, listen, I'm got in a complete mess. I have absolutely no idea where I am. I'll send you a link or something, but I don't know where I am. Can you come? Can you get me home? And the farmer says, no. This is your own stupid fault. You wandered off, you buy your own bus ticket, and when you get home, we'll talk about it. And that's not what you see from the farmer. What you see is all the effort in this story is on the farmer. The farmer goes out, the farmer gets the sheep, the farmer carries the sheep home. In fact, it's a slightly ridiculous story when you think about it. Jesus says, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and you lose one of them. Won't he leave the 99 and go and look? No, you wouldn't, would you? Like those of us who did basic mathematics, no, we would not abandon 99 for one. And Jesus, in a way, by inserting the slightly ridiculous imagery there of abandoning 99 to find one, what he's saying through that is, look, it's not based on your value or your performance or your goodness. Actually, it's not because you are worth more than anyone else, not that you are worthy of being rescued. It's just because he wants you home. There's a story by C.S. Lewis where one of his science fiction novels, which I think expresses the kind of idea of what it means to relate to God. He tells a story about this man who's going to visit a friend, and his friend lives out in the countryside, out in this remote house far away from anywhere. And he's walking along to go and visit his friend. And he knows in the first book in this series that his friend has brought these spirit beings, these aliens from another world, to his house. And as he walks towards his house to meet his friend and to meet these alien spirit beings, he says he becomes more and more afraid. With every step he takes, and as it becomes darker and darker, he walks out to this remote house, and he thinks, these things are evil. These things are evil, and they're going to kill me. And he becomes more and more terrified of these evil beings that are going to kill him. And then he says, as he takes a step close, as he gets right up to the house, he stops having that fear, and he has another much deeper fear. And that fear is, what if these beings are not evil? What if these beings are good? And he says, if they're evil, perhaps I could conquer them. But if they are pure goodness, who could stand in the presence of pure goodness? And that's the question with God, isn't it? Who can stand in the presence of pure goodness? Maybe you've asked that question, how could I connect to God? How could I stand in the presence of pure goodness? Or maybe you haven't asked it as a moral question. Maybe you've just asked it practically. How, as a human, can I reconnect with God? It's very simple. It's not on you. And at the heart of the Christian faith, isn't it, is the cross. It's an image of God come to us, bleeding and dying for us. I came not to be served, but to serve, and to give my life as a ransom, as a payment for many. It's not on us. And you might say, well, I've been a Christian a long time. This is familiar. This is nice. I like the way you explain this, Luke, but I'm fairly familiar with this. I don't think it quite speaks to my situation. I felt like maybe I had a stronger connection with God. I'm not quite sure where I'm at in my relationship with God at the moment. It's interesting that the Apostle Paul writes, and written many other ways in the New Testament, he said, just as you received Christ Jesus as Lord, continue to live your lives in him. What Paul says is, the way that you become a follower of Jesus is the way you continue as a follower of Jesus. It's simply saying, God, I've wandered from you. I want to come home. Please welcome me home, not on the basis of me, but on the basis of Jesus, who's made the payment on my behalf. That's how you begin a relationship with God. That's how you renew your relationship with God. And I don't know about you, I'm in constant need of renewal in my relationship with God. I will close with one very brief story before we go to communion. And this is from the last time I was a student. I was a student at Oxford University, and it was very hard for me because I wouldn't say I'm stupid, but I wouldn't say I'm naturally quick, intellectually maybe would be the word to say. Often I would be in the library all night sometimes, or be up really late at home with all these books I got out of the library. It's working hard. It's really hard work for me, actually, to study these things. So I was working hard. And then the other thing was we had these brilliant professors who were just geniuses in their field. And so we were learning great ideas I'd never come across, lots of ideas I'd never come across before. Great ideas. I was learning great things, and I was working hard. And the last week that I was a student there, I was in the car with some other guys I'd studied with. And my friends said, well, listen, what from this time we've spent here in Oxford, what will you remember, do you think, the most? What will stay with you? And it's interesting that nobody said how hard they worked, and nobody said how much they knew. Everybody said, oh, it's the friendships. It's the friendships with other people. And I think we hit on something there. There is relationships, isn't it, at the core of reality. And that's what Jesus is saying in this story. Do you want to be free? Find your freedom in me, but you're not going to find that freedom through how hard you work. You're not going to find that freedom through having even more knowledge about the Bible, even more knowledge about theology, even though those things are actually really good and really helpful. So it's not how hard you work. It's not how much you know. I just want you to come home. So the search for freedom must include the search for God if it is going to be adequate. And we're going to move into communion in a moment. I'd love you to use that as a moment, actually, to meditate on the fact that, and to think about the fact that here we have the bread, here we have the wine that symbolize for us Jesus breaking himself to bring us home. And also it would be a good, I think, to in that moment to speak to God and say, God, I'm sorry, I've wandered from you, and I want to come home afresh.